You are listening to Punk News Podcast in duo style. Hallie and John. John and Hallie back again in action. Will Adam join later on? Stay tuned and find out. I think that's the phrase. Punk News Podcast. It's on. Podcast. Adam White has got man duties right now, and he's doing mankind things, but he will be in later on in the show, we hope. But in the meantime, we've got Hallie and John for you, and if that's not enough for you, then I don't even want you to listen if that's not enough for you, because we got Hallie Bullock. Hallie Bullock, what's happening? How are you? What's going on? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling okay. I'm especially glad that we're recording this as the last presidential debate is happening. And I'm actually really relieved to have a good reason not to watch it, because those things stress me out. And I don't really learn like that much from them. So it's really not worth the stress. So much, much happier talking to you. And I don't know. Yeah, I wasn't I didn't join you guys last week. Oh, I want to listen, not on air, but I want to know how the Ramones episode went. And I've been writing letters to voters like crazy. I don't normally wear my reading glasses, because I do so much reading on screens, and I can just make the print extra large, like they make it for old ladies. I can just like enlarge the print on my screen. And so I never wear these damn reading glasses, but I'm writing letters to voters, like a ton of freaking letters, John. I can't even tell you how much writing I did over the last couple of weeks. And I have to wear my reading glasses to see what I'm writing, and my eyes aren't used to it. And so I'm like walking around with like a splitting headache from my reading glasses. My neck and back are hurting because I've been like hunched over like paper and pen. When's the last time I hunched over paper and pen? Like the whole thing feels like so old fashioned, but it's been like, can I tell you, it's been like so actually therapeutic to write letters to voters and just like try to get across to people how important it is to vote. So that, and it's like I was feeling so much despair about the election, and then that actually really made me feel better. It made me feel like there was just something in my control that I could do that felt like positive. So I'm like, I'm in a pretty good place right now, like better than I've been for a while. So I like highly recommend to people, like if you've had any impulse to volunteer for the election, do any kind of volunteering, reaching out to voters, it does, I will say, it does make you feel a little better.
So what you were doing recently was writing handwritten letters to voters that they should go and vote. Is that what you were doing?
Yeah, to voters in swing states. It was like just sort of explaining like what I think's at stake in the election and like why I think it's so important to vote. And, you know, I tried to make it like tried to get my points across, but also like end on like an optimistic note, like we can do this and go to you. You know, and it worked on me. I convinced myself that it's very important to vote.
I guess, what did you learn from doing this? And also, like how long was your app? Was it like four sentences, or was it like page after page? And like, did you have guidelines? Were you just like, hey, what's up, Bill Jones out in Missouri? Listen, here's what I'm thinking. Like,
or I had guidelines. I had guidelines. The guidelines were to try to keep it to three or four sentences. People just don't want to read much more than that. And There were like some talking points that they suggested you bring up, but they were really broad. So it was really, you really could, like, they wanted you to be personal about it, like why specifically the election mattered to you. Because I think that is what persuades people when they hear like story, you know, they want to know kind of what you're, you, I think stories persuade people. So it was, I don't know. It was cool. Have you voted yet?
No. They don't have early voting in Pennsylvania, so I'm going to vote in person.
That's awesome. I kind of would like to vote in person. I feel like there'd be something really like gratifying about that. Just like go and like just put my ballot in. There'd be something really immediate and satisfying about doing it on election day. But they're actually doing like they're really encouraging you to vote by mail in Jersey. And if you go in person, you actually get like what's called like a provisional ballot, because they've already mailed you a mail-in ballot and they need an explanation as to why you're not voting that way. So it's too complicated. So I'm just doing the mail-in.
I have this weird fantasy, and you can tell me this is weird, is usually, probably not this time, and probably for my good health and safety, but usually they have like people outside, like, are you going to vote for Bill Jones? Are you going to vote for Mike Smith? You know? And I have this fantasy, I'm like, oh yeah? Well, you're a guy who could have voted to impeach Trump when he had the chance, was too weak, so I'm not voting for him. You know, like really like blast him, but I feel that's probably not a healthy emotion to hold on to, and that's probably not a conflict. If I'm looking forward to that conflict, that probably shows I'm somewhat unhealthy psyche wise. I don't know, you know.
You and everyone else, I do feel like people are just, there are so many people that just kind of, I don't know, would kind of like a fight at this point, because we've all been just like wallowing in our feelings, and like I do think there's some people that would just like to have like, I don't know, just like someone to yell at. but I don't know if like outside the voting place is like the place to do it. Just like go get your shit done and like feel good about it and walk away, man. That's what I think.
Hallie Bullitt has underscored a point that I think everyone from the kids in preschool to the most powerful people in our country could learn. Act like an adult, except for actually if you're in preschool, you don't do it. Act like an adult because you're in preschool. If you're 18 plus, act like an adult. Right. Right.
So many things would may be made better right now if all of us would just follow that advice.
You know, there's that corny thing like all I need to know is I learned in kindergarten. But it's true. It's true. Yeah, you know,
kind of. Yeah.
One thing. So let's not jinx ourselves. So let's knock on some wood. So Hallie Bullitt, you're feeling good. You're feeling optimistic.
I don't know if I'm feeling optimistic as much as I'm feeling just like, okay, like I did, at least I did something, you know, because the thing is, I feel like if this goes in my mind the wrong way, if this election goes the way I don't want it to go and I didn't participate or like try to, if I didn't do anything in the weeks leading up and then it went the wrong way, I just don't think I would be able to forgive myself. So at least it's given me like a feeling of just empowerment and that I'm part of this little train that's just chugging along, just trying to, you know, get the country back on course, you know?
What if something weird happens and it turns out that like 320 million people do write-in ballots for Joe Jack Talcum and Joe Jack Talcum gets elected president? What would you do then?
Oh, wait a minute. What do you think? What would be the first big thing he'd do in office? What would be like his first big like presidential like what's that called? Edict? No, it's not an edict. That's like a king would do. What's the big executive order? What would be his first big executive order in office?
Well, see, Joe Jack Talcum is a very non-confrontational person, but he's also very much a sage. You know, he sees the world as it is, and he's very sensitive. So I think Joe Jack Talcum's – I know a lot of people would think like he would do something wacky, but he would actually probably do something very like he would probably like end the death penalty, not to be too grim and weird about it, but that, I think that's what he would do, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. Just something good. He would just do something that's just like a good person would do it.
Right, right. Yeah. So listen, yeah. I shouldn't even say that, Hallie. People, please do not write in Joe Jack Talcum. Please don't waste your vote. Please. I shouldn't have even said that. All right, listen. Let's get rocking. You can always reach that podcast at punknews.org, and we got a little bit of mail. This is from Frank, and here's what Frank has to say. Dear Punk News, ah! And that's from Frank. And this is from Delius97. He says, what are you doing for Record Store Day? Are you doing social distancing and masks? In Georgia, it seems like people just don't care. I went to my record store and people weren't wearing masks or even social distancing. I want to go to Record Store Day, but I don't want to get sick. That's from Delius97. Hallie Bullitt, what should Delius97 do on Record Store Day, which is this Saturday?
I'd go and I'd like suss it out. Go, bring your mask, bring your hand sanitizer. Go if it seems like there's a way for you to, like, you know, maybe if most of the waiting on if there's waiting online involved, if most of that is outside the store and you can just kind of once you're in the store, maybe just get your, you know, wear your mask, get up to the front, pay, get out of there without too much like hanging around. You know, and then I think you could do it. But I would kind of show up and sort of suss out what it's actually going to be like to be shopping in a record store that day and just see whether you're comfortable or not. John, what would you do?
Well, I've been going to record stores for the past, well, basically since you've been allowed to go into stores with a mask and stuff, which I think is cool and fair and is a good idea. And I think the science shows that it's cool and fair and is a good idea. Mm-hmm. I luckily have the option, the record store that I go to, Electric Avenue, for Record Store Day. I've got different record stores for different purposes that I visit to because I'm weird. Well, not weird, because I'm a connoisseur, you know what I mean? and so for Record Store Day, I go to Electric Avenue, which is very much a college new record store, and that most of the stuff they sell is new records, and they get dad rock guys and college students because it's near Westchester University. And I'm lucky enough in that the way they do it is you email them what you want noon the day before, and then you get assigned a spot as if you had been standing in line, but you actually weren't, you know. And people say, well, that's not actually going to the record store. Yes, I know it's not actually going to the record store, but I think we can make an exception, and you can go to the record store 364 days out of the year that aren't Record Store Day, you know, and so I think that's a good way to do it. If you don't have that option, then I think, like Hallie says, suss it out. And honestly, like 5 years ago, the vast majority of Record Store Day stuff, you can get on Discogs for pretty much market rate, you know what I mean? So yes, support your local record store. If you're worried about getting sick, or even if you're not worried about getting sick, if the situation seems gnarly, maybe hang back, you know, use your phone, go on Discogs, see if it's there, pick it up, and then go visit the record store any other day. You know what I mean? When there's not that many people there. That's my advice.
Yeah, totally. I think that's great advice.
And you can also use that podcast at punknews.org. There's one thing that I want to mention, and then we will play a tune and then hit our news of the week. And what I'm about to mention will play into our news of the week. Hallie Bullitt, we are running a giant interview with Jello Biafra at Punk News. It's going to be at least five parts, maybe six. It is about 15,000 words, which is one fifth of a novel, one interview. And what happened was I interviewed Jello about 2 years ago, and I'm going to pat myself in the back here. I did what I think is one of my very best interviews ever, and I really think I knocked it out of the park. And that piece was called Jello Biafra on What Makes Up Jello Biafra. And it talks about what makes Jello Biafra, why is he the way he is. And so he just put out a new album, which we're going to talk about. And so, I want to do an interview again with him. And I was thinking, well, I could do another profile piece, but on the if you've done a really good profile piece, it's hard to do a second one and like make it as good. I've tried it a couple times, and the second one usually comes out not as good, you know, a little bit bland or somewhat missing direction. So I wasn't sure how I was going to do it, and I called him up on midnight on a Friday. Hallie, I thought the conversation was going to be about – well, most music interviews are 15 minutes. That's the standard music interviews, 15 minutes. I thought this was going to be about 30 minutes because it was Jello. How long do you think this interview was, Hallie?
I don't know. You said you said it's going to be out in like five parts?
3 hours. I was thrilled. I love talking to Jello. I love Jello. So this one, let's just do a Q&A and let Jello talk about what he wants to talk about. And have been exceedingly negative towards it, but that doesn't bother me because the commenters are not really good judges of content, generally speaking. No. But Hallie, from your perspective, what do you think of running an unedited, and by unedited I mean not cutting anything out, not, you know, clarifying or condensing anything, just strictly doing a transcript of 3 hours of Jello talking about politics, the dead Kennedys, his new album, his feelings. Is that interesting or is that just too much?
Oh, that really depends on like what, you know, I think you got to judge like the quality of, you know, because all of us, like sometimes any of us that have given interviews, sometimes you're really on and you're saying a ton of cool, interesting stuff. And sometimes you end up rambling about something. And then afterwards you're like, why did I talk about blah, blah so much? You know, so I think you just have to, you know, if it's all like gold, you know, if it's all like interesting stuff or stuff that fans are going to want to read, then just put it out as is. If there's some tangents that maybe can, it would be just it would have more flow if it was a little bit edited. I mean, I'm kind of a fan of edited interviews because to me, it's like, I kind of just, you want as many people to get through it and get to the important parts as possible. And I think mm-hmm. you can invite people to stay in it with you longer if it has flow, if it doesn't just sort of meander. Do you know what I'm saying? But if the whole thing was just, also we had to go back. So you guys decided that the interview was going to be at midnight on a Friday, or you're just like so tight with him that you were just like, let me just pick up the phone and call him at midnight on a Friday.
No, that was when the interview was scheduled for.
That's amazing. Is that normal? I mean, I don't normally interview like punk rock legends. Like, is that normal to do an interview at midnight on a Friday?
That's not normal, but that is normal for Jello because he is Jello Biafra, and he is a wonderful and interesting and funny person, but he is also a very odd person. I don't mean that dismissively. I mean, he is genuinely an odd character.
I like absolutely love that. That's amazing. So what do you lean towards? Do you feel like that it's just a great interview and I want people to read all of it?
I don't think all of it is gold and is super interesting. I think what is interesting, some of it is gold, certainly. And I didn't want to do the thing where, so what's up with the dead Kennedys? And like the dead Kennedys battles has been hashed and rehashed, and the war is over, honestly, you know?
Yeah.
But I did want to, I guess the idea is the last interview I did with him was John painting a picture of Jello Biafra, whereas this one is Jello painting a picture of Jello Biafra. And like, here's what Jello is. And he's all over the place and he's extremely knowledgeable and extremely detailed, but also he's a madman, zipping here, zipping there, you know. And if you ask him a question, he can talk for 20 minutes. And so I want the interview to demonstrate who Jello is, not necessarily through by what he says, even though he does say some very interesting things, but by how he says it. And I think that was the idea. So
yeah. Yeah. I think that's so awesome. I can't wait to read it. When are you going to put it out?
It's been running all week. It started on Monday. It's still running and we'll see how it ends. listen, listeners, if you don't read the whole thing, it doesn't hurt my feelings because it is like 15,000 words, which is basically a novella. I would say look for the stuff specifically about the new album. He has some very interesting things to say there. Look for the stuff about the dead Kennedys, even though I just said that's not the most interesting things. He actually has some very interesting things about the dead Kennedys in there. And look for the stuff where he talks about Dave Brocky. And if you're a Jello fan, those parts are definitely gold. So.
Well, I can't wait. I got to take a break from writing all these voters and I got to just really read this interview. The whole time I'm just going to imagine you guys just like chewing the fat at midnight on a Friday. I love that.
Jello is honestly like people always say, you know, never meet your hero. And I don't really have any punk rock. I mean, my heroes are my parents. Yeah, I admire Jello and Keith Morris and Black Daddy, but they're not my heroes, but I admire them a great deal. But people say never meet your heroes. But I got to say within punk rock, the majority of quote heroes or people I admire have been who think they are, and they're like pretty cool. And Jello is one of them for sure.
Yeah.
So let's play a new track off Jello's brand new album. The new album is called Tea Party Revenge Porn. I'm still not totally sold on the title, but that being said, the album itself is freaking great. Let's play probably my favorite. My favorite track on this album, Let's Play, and it's one of the shortest. It's called – I thought it's called it's not called Pressure Drop. I think it's called Pressure Drop, but it's not called Pressure Drop. Let's do We Created Putin because it's hardcore, but it also has Jello's first foray into reggae, which I dig. So this is Jello doing Jello and the Guantanamo School of Medicine doing We Created Putin, and we'll be right back. And that was Jello's brand new track. Halle, Jello's new album is out. And I'm going to rant, and you can respond to my rant.
Yeah.
Jello, unlike a lot of punk heroes, Jello's post-classic period, his post-DK period, has actually been pretty good. Not everything is super great, but he's had some albums that are almost as good as, say, Plastic Surgery Disasters or Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables. Jelvin's 1 and 2, especially Jelvin's 2, friggin' awesome. Jello and New Orleans Soul Ranch All-Stars, which is Jello doing all soul stuff, friggin' great. To my surprise, when we did Jello Week last year, the year before, or 2 years ago, Jello and No Means No is actually like super-duper good, as is Jello and DOA. Jello and the Guantanamo School of Medicine, which is really only his second true band after the Dead Kennedys. Their three or four previously releases have all been very good. The criticism, in which I tend to agree, is they're very good, but all the songs are like 4 and 5 minutes, and you're like, you know what? I've gotten what I've got out of this song after 2 minutes. So I wish they just cut it after 2 minutes, and it would have been and the second half, you could have just made a different song, and no one would know. And so the criticism of the earlier Jello and the Guantanamo School of Medicine is the stuff is very good, but the songs just are a little too long, a little too drawn out. Let's trim the fat. And I think I would guess that the reason that occurs is because Jello is Jello. He's got more weight than the rest of the band, you know, and he says, this is what I got to do. And it can be hard to say, nah, I think you need to trim that back a little bit, you know. And not that the Jello albums, the GSM albums are bad, because they're actually very good. Not quite as good as the Jelvins. However, that being said, the new album, Tea Party Revenge Porn, without question. Oh, and Lard, Jello's band Lard with Al Jurgensen. Awesome band, too. The new album, Tea Party Revenge Porn, the songs, once again, are somewhat long. We've got a 6-minute track, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes. So for punk songs, that's kind of long for a lot of these songs. However, a lot of the songs have multiple parts, such as We Created Putin, such as Satan's Comb Over. And for the most part, it's just the band raging, but they rage in this way, and then they change up, they rage in that way. So I would say that Jello is still on fire. He still sounds like Jello. I mean, listen, I mean, Jello's not a spring chicken. Jello's 60 years old. I mean, that's not ancient, but you know, that's getting up there, you know. And he is just raging. He sounds great. The band is almost like a thrash metal band on this release. And I would say maybe some of the songs could have been trimmed down, but for the most part, this is an extremely strong album, and without question is the best written GSM stuff. The dance that Jello does on this album is a lot of this is extremely topical. The Tea Party Revenge Porn, We Created Putin, and famously Jello said that with California Uber Alice, he sort of regretted that he chained it to a time period, but I guess he hasn't learned his lesson. But on the other hand, maybe that's like maybe it is kind of awesome that Jello, much like Crass, or even parts of The Clash, is directly commenting on something that's happening now. And if it's not relevant in 5 years, well, so what? He'll make other music then, you know? So I dig this album a lot. It's definitely the best GSM album. If you like Dead Kennedys, you will dig this. I think the best way to hear this is CD or headphones, just because Jello, unlike a lot of punk rockers, does like very good production, but not overproduction. So it sounds great. So you really want to hear the rumble of the guitars and the drums. And I dig this release.
I'm enjoying this, but I feel like I read in the comments on Punk News, I felt like I read that people were enjoying it more the more they listened to it. And also I thought it was interesting that some people that hadn't liked the initial, I think you said this also, John, that like the singles or the cuts that came out from this before the album came out were maybe not even the strongest ones on the track, and that like the actual album is like much stronger. I gotta give it a couple more listens. It was like I listened to it today while I was like doing other stuff, so I've got to keep listening to it. But I think it's incredible that he's still putting stuff out and that he's still making himself, you know, really like still relevant. And sorry, I just got distracted because my husband closed the door, which I can only assume means there's something loud happening in my house that I don't know what it is. And I think it's great that he's writing about stuff that's actually happening now, because I personally like lyrics that are specific. I don't want to hear a song that's just kind of railing against the man, or like something so generic that it could exist in any time period. I like specifics when people are writing songs. So I like that he's commenting on stuff that's actually happening right now.
Hallie, you bring up two interesting points. First is, yes, a lot of people did think the early singles were not that good, and myself included. There's actually a very concrete answer for that. Those were pre-release versions of the tracks that hadn't been mastered properly and hadn't even been fully recorded yet. And against people's advice, Jello wanted them out anyways when everyone was like, well, it's not quite done. He's like, no, these need to get out because they're so timely. And so those versions, if you listen to them now, the new ones are much, much better. And I wonder if Jello hurt himself a little bit, or did he help himself? Because people are like, oh, this was not going to be that great. And then it kicks our ass. You know what I mean? So maybe Jello's completely subverted the whole thing. Like, the idea of a single is to get people excited and then check out the rest of the album. But I guess Jello's like lowered people's expectations and then came out with something way better, you know?
But do you think there's people that are going to not check it out because they weren't blown away by those first singles? Because I do think you do have to come out, I think, with your best. Well, I don't know. He's Jello. He can do whatever he wants. But for most fans, I would say you really do want to put your best foot forward. You probably shouldn't put out singles that like aren't even really done. But he can do whatever he wants.
I agree. I don't think that's a great strategy, you know, but maybe it was a fluke. The other thing that you mentioned is, you know, we talked about this last week. So I don't think it's posted yet. John Lydon endorsing Trump. Big bummer for me. A lot of mixed emotions there. Ice Cube sort of endorsing Trump. A lot of a mixed emotion. Ice Cube, you know. So it is super cool when Penny Rimbaud, when Steve Ignorant, when Jello Biafra, they're still who they are. Joe Jack Talcum, they're still who they are. You know what I mean? And that's super rad, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I just don't get I do not get Morrissey, John Lydon. I do not get these guys that like sang like for the underdog, for the oppressed. Those are the people they represented, and they've just, these like Benedict Arnolds. It makes me so angry. I can't even talk about it. Let's move on.
Very good. Let's move along to four people that are still who they are, or at least definitely two of them are, because I saw them last year and they were awesome. The Damned. They're doing four tour dates next year. You say, John, what's so special about The Damned doing four tour dates next year? Who cares? They tour all the time. But it is the original Damned. It is Dave Vanian, Rat Scabies, Captain Sensible, and who am I missing? Brian James. You know, the original guitarist who hasn't been in the band since the second album. They're doing four tour dates. I don't think this is being pitched as the original Damned are back. I think this is being pitched as this is diversion is the right word, but this is one thing that the Damned are doing, but the current version of the Damned will continue to exist alongside, I guess you could say, the original version of the Damned. This is quite surprising for two reasons. A, Captain Sensible and Dave Vanian and Ratscape, Captain Sensible and Dave Vanian on one side and Ratscape on the other, can't stand each other. Maybe they're friends again. Who knows? I don't know. You know, but like they bickered like in the 90s. They really like were not fans of each other. And the Cabinets take shots at him even recently. Brian James, I think the argument is that he left the Damned. And so the rest of the Damned felt bummed that he left because he was the original song player. He was the original guy behind the Damned, really, especially the first album. He left. And so the rest of the Damned, I think, felt somewhat betrayed or disappointed. And then, of course, they released Machine Gun Etiquette and released arguably the best Damned album. So they were like, well, if he doesn't need us, then we don't need him. And so why should we let him back in? And that's why he's never really rejoined the band, although he has done a couple of shows with them here and there, including the live semi-bootleg album Molten Lock, which has Brian James on it. But anyway, a lot of people were super excited about this. I'm excited about this. I don't know if I'll fly out to England to see this, but I don't know. I might consider it. I don't know. Some people were complaining about the price, £75, which is about $100. I've got some thoughts, but Hallie Bullitt, the original Damned back together, is this awesome or is this needless nostalgia that we don't need in 2021?
No, I think this is awesome. I think this is awesome. And actually, you know, just because you were saying like you don't know if you would like fly to England to see it. Like, I mean, I don't know that I would either, but I feel like I had some friends that flew to Europe to see The Cure like last year, I think. And I was like, I love The Cure, but that's like a big commitment. You fly all the way. But there's something about like COVID and the year that we've had. I wonder if there aren't more people that would be open to traveling to England to see these shows than would have been like this time last year. Because I just feel like I feel like our attitude about like live shows and like the privilege of seeing live music and like the privilege of seeing the people that we love, the musicians that we love playing the music that we love. I just feel like our gratitude around that has really like shifted. And so like, I just thought it was interesting that you mentioned that because I feel like there's more people now that are going to want to fly, try to get these tickets and fly to England to see these shows than would have been the case like this time last year. Because I think just something like this just feels more, I don't know. It already would have felt momentous and like somehow it feels like more momentous to me now. I don't know.
Well, as Hallie Bullitt says, you don't miss the water till the well runs dry, which is very, very true in the context of live shows, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is cool. I would definitely go see this if it was around. Like I said, maybe I probably won't, but maybe I will. I'm leaving it open. I guess they'll probably just do like the first album, maybe a couple of tracks from the second. Because would it be weird if they did like Machine Gun Etiquette, which Brian James isn't even on? Would that be weird? Or would that be cool?
I mean, it would be cool, but I think you're right. It'd be like it'd feel more like authentic or exciting to like see the stuff that he actually played on the recordings.
I did see the Damn tour where they did all of Damn, Damn, Damned, took a break, came back and did all of the Black album, took a break, came back and did all of Curtain Call, took a break, came back and did another encore. But that was without Brian James, of course. And honestly, that was super, like it was amazingly rad just to see them do all of Damn, Damn, Damned straight through. And that's without Brian James. That was Captain, Dave, Monty, Pinch, and the other guy, who am I missing? Pinch is the drummer. Monty's keyboard, the bass player, I forget his name. He's not in the band now because now it's Paul Gray. But that was super rad. So one thought I did have, though, Hallie, are they kind of squelching themselves out of a huge payday? Because couldn't they conceivably headline at least a day of Riot Fest or certainly a day of Punk Rock Bowling as the original Damned? Or am I overstating the importance? Or is this really a cult thing that most people actually wouldn't care about and just a few thousand maniacs really would care about?
I don't know. I think it's exciting, but I don't know that I like speak for every Damned fan. And it's I feel like you can better because like I haven't. It's not like I've been going to see them all these years, but this is something that would inspire me to just buy the ticket and get to the show and like go see them. I think this is cool, but yeah, maybe for people that have been seeing them live this whole time, they're like, meh. I don't know. I think fans would be excited. I don't know about also like the payday of like them headlining these four shows in England and then possibly doing a tour as opposed to the Riot Fest thing. Like, I just don't know the numbers of that, of like how much bands get paid for that stuff.
True. One thing, not to drag this conversation out, but to tag along on that artists that are upholding their artistic credibility, I got to say overall, like even the Damned have broken up a whole bunch of times and there's been a whole lot of lineup changes. Integrity wise, as an artistic standpoint and even a financial standpoint, I mean, like £75 is a lot for a show, but if anybody deserves the big punk payday, I think it's the Damned. And even that's not that, I mean, people will spend $300 to go see One Direction or whatever, you know, or Lady Gaga. And I'm not anti-Lady Gaga. So if Lady Gaga is getting $300, I think the Damned should get $100, you know. And if it was always $100, that might be annoying. But, you know, this is kind of a special thing that they're putting a lot of work into. But the point being is the Damned are always doing something interesting. They put out a live album like 2 years – not a live album. They put out an album about 2 years ago. They just put out an EP. Last year they did that Gathering of the Vampires thing where Dave Vanney dressed up as Nosferatu. And next year they're doing the original Damned. So the Damned are pretty – doing interesting things in the later part of their career, and they're not destroying their earlier legacy, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're cool. Also, we should mention, I think they're doing, or they say they're doing this because it's the, what is it? It's like the 45th anniversary of New Rose coming out as a single.
Yeah.
I think that's
probably,
right.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah. 45 plus 76.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. I don't know. I think it's neat. I mean, I'm not going to fly to England to do this, but I wish that I would. I wish that I was flying to England to do this.
Fair enough. Speaking of other guys that are upholding their long and proud history, John Reese of Rocket from the Crypt, of Hot Snakes, of Drive Leg Yehu, He's putting out a 7-inch single as Swami John Reese, which is a moniker he's used for a while. A-side is Ride the Wild Night, and B-side is I Hate My Neighbors in the Yellow House, which is a cool title. He's also working on a new solo LP called Ride the Wild Night, and he also has a new album that he's working with another band that I am missing below. But here we go. He's got a project called Plosivus with Rob Crow of Pinback, Adam Willard of Against Me, and Jordan Clark of Ms. Magician and Hot Like a Robot. And so he's got two albums coming out, the single. I listened to this track, I Hate My Neighbors in the Yellow House, and I dug it. I definitely dug the New Order-ish kind of thing in the background with the synth keyboards. Halle Bullet, are you a fan of Rocket from the Crypt and John Reese and the Swami Records label?
I'm a huge Rocket from the Crypt fan and a huge Hot Snakes fan. I like these singles a lot. Maybe not as much as like my favorite stuff from either of those bands, but I thought this was great. And honestly, the most exciting thing to me about all of this was this announcement that he's going to do this new project with like the guy from Pinback and like the drummer from Against Me. That is a crossroads of so many things that I'm excited and interested in. Sorry, I think my phone is dinging. That's so rude. Sorry. My phone is now on silent.
I'm so profesh.
My phone is like ding, ding, ding. I don't know. I like the idea of like, you know, just like the sheer like rock and roll of like Rocket from the Crypt and Hot Snakes. And then like the sort of like disjointed like indie rock of Pinback and then like a straightforward punk drummer like Against Me. Like I am so curious to know what this music is gonna sound like. So I like I'm really kind of waiting with bated breath for this plosives. Is that how we think we say it?
Let's take a guess here. Plosives. Yeah, it sounds plosives. Right to me. Plosives.
Yeah. I'm super psyched for this.
You know, one band's name that I've seen a lot that I don't know anything about is like, I always confuse Pinback with Streakback, and Streakback is like industrial, I think, but Pinback's not an industrial. Like, what is Pinback?
It's indie rock, but it has some loops and electronic-y feel to it, but I'd say it's just pretty deeply based in just like good old fashioned like moody indie rock, and I love that band. I think that band is smart. I don't always like when music is smart. Sometimes that just is like means it's like too heady, but this is like catchy, smart, like and I mean smart in terms of like the songwriting's not, it's not like it's not predictable. It's not stuff that you feel like you've heard before, and obviously like really, really, really good musicianship, just like top notch musicianship. So I think this project is going to be really interesting no matter what, even whether it's for me or whether punk news people are like into it or not. I think it's going to be something really interesting. I also think it's interesting because I don't think all of these guys, like, I'm not sure where all of them live, but I think they don't, any of them live really in the same place. And so I think that's cool. And I wonder if there's like a COVID influence there, because I do feel like people right now are making music and they're having to collaborate with people that they can't necessarily get together with. And like, I think that that's kind of opened things up in terms of collaborations, because it's like, well, if I can't rehearse in a room with the people I'm making music with anyway, then I'm not limited to the people that live near me. Like I can, who in this entire goddamn world do I want to collaborate with now? So I'm like, I'm curious to know if like anything of this 2020 lockdown crisis, I wonder if that had any influence on this decision for all these guys to collaborate together.
We're going to play a song in a second, but Halle, I'm getting breaking news right now. Max Calavera cut off his one mono giant dreadlock that he's had for 23 years. How do you feel about that? It was getting pretty gross looking. It was getting pretty, pretty gnarly looking.
Listen, it's a year where just everything's changing. So, yes, just lop off your dread. Do it, man. It's a new world.
Halle, you got a track for us to play?
Oh, you know, I do actually. But hold on though. Do I have my shit together? This is a band that's actually a friend of mine, and I had to dig deep into my soul and ask myself, am I just playing this because it's my friend, or do I truly love this song? And I can say I truly, truly love it. Of all the stuff that I've been listening to in the last couple of weeks, this is the one that I just find like I kind of just want to listen to over and over again. And so this is a band called Crafting. They're from Delaware, and the guy that I know that's in this band is David Sanchez, who if anyone's like if any listeners are Delaware people, he runs a Space Boy clothing, which is like a really, really cool Wilmington. It's like a screen printing shop, and they sell like vintage stuff, and they do like their own like original designs of clothing and stuff. That's a store, and they do comedy shows and rock shows there. Space Boy is just like culturally just like a really, really cool spot in Delaware. And David is just like one of these people that like is multi-talented, and so he's also like a visual artist and had the ability to like do design and stuff, and so he kind of went in that direction. But now he's finally doing music, which is like another thing he's super, super talented at, and I think it's super exciting. So this band is called Crafting. This isn't the kind of stuff that I normally play on here. It's maybe more just like straightforward, kind of like I'd say like early to mid, like mid 2000s, like really fast emo, like punk, pop punk. But I think this is catchy as fuck. So I like it. This song is called Moving Day by Crafting, and it's off their album Catastrophe.
Crafting off their album Catastrophe. I gotta check out Space Boy. I haven't been down there recently, but when things open back up, I will check it out because I used to go down to 1984 down there. And what's the other place down there? 1980. Well, World Cafe, not World Cafe Live. Whatever used to be World Cafe Live down there, but also the other place down there that just kind of closed.
I have never played Wilmington. I don't know why, but I don't really, I'm not really familiar with the venues there, but I know that that this space is doing cool stuff. So, what were you saying? 1984 is like the other big club down there?
The big one is the one that was World Cafe Live. It still might be a world. I think it is still World Cafe Live. Then there's 1984 and Bar 13, and then I guess there is now Space Boy, which is a place down there. I mean, and let's not like the Wilmington music scene isn't huge because it's right next to Philadelphia, but it's got something going on. It's got cool stuff going on down there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I actually skipped this story by accident. This is kind of a sad story, but we'll mention it, and then we'll move on to happier stuff. Bob Briggs, the founder of Slash Records and Slash Magazine, passed away. He was 74. He had complications from dementia, which is that's a terrible way to go. But he did have the foresight to put out records by the Germs, the Blasters, X, Los Lobos, which of course developed out of the Plugs, Fear, Faith No More, Violent Femmes, L7, and many more. And he also actually helped sign some other bands to some bigger labels as well. But and also, of course, he put out Slash Magazine, which at least for the time being you can download for free right now with the consent of the party that owns the rights to that now. And I downloaded it, and well, Hallie, I'll let you go, and then I'll talk about my feelings with Slash Magazine.
No, I mean, this guy was super cool. And I'll be honest, like, I wasn't like that familiar with like him as a person. Obviously, I have a ton of records that came out on Slash.
Right. True, true.
But I was sort of just like reading up for tonight's show and just sort of catching up on who this guy was. Like, again, you talk about someone who's like, he was a visual artist, like that, that Swans, record cover that he designed. I was like, oh, I feel like that's a really iconic record cover. Like, and he did the Flaming X on like the Los Angeles, X cover. He just sounds like he was a cool guy. Obviously Slash Records and the magazine super important. So yeah, that's a bummer that someone like that is gone.
He put out the Germs. I mean, he put out one of the greatest punk records of the Germs. That's crazy. So anyways, I mean, I'm not gonna lie and say that I know everything about Slash Mag. I mean, I'm aware of Slash Magazine. Their logo is good. And actually, as Hallie put out, he really is a fantastic visual artist. I mean, the Slash logo is so iconic. The Germs album covers are iconic. That Swans record is the Swans record is so great because it's so simple, but it like conjures so many different like emotions and images, you know what I mean? Like, it really is extremely well done. So anyway, you can download Slash Magazine for free, all like 20 issues or whatever it is. And like, I'm like reading it, I'm like, holy crap. Like, every review is like a massively important record. They're talking about the Ramones, Sex Pistols, Buzzcocks, Germs, Black Randy and the Metro Squad, Geyser X, Dead Kennedys, Crime, The Nuns. And like, they're reviewing like these records as we would review stuff now at Punk News. Like, at Punk News, like, we review stuff like, no one cares about this. This is not that important. But like, every single record is like a super important record. And so the question that I had, and I don't know if there's an answer to it, is like, every single record reviewed in those early Slash Magazine records is an iconic, amazing record. Was the music scene so amazing at that point that no matter what you reviewed, it's going to be an amazing thing? Or was his curation by reviewing these records the thing that curated these guys as the pantheon of famous and well-respected punk rock? I don't know, you know, but like, it's like, wow, it's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know, but it makes you sort of like, I mean, I feel like in my lifetime, like I'm super excited about the music that came out like when I was like in high school and in college. I feel like that like late teens, early 20s, like era of your life is like somehow that's like the music that just like really defines you as a person. But like you like see episodes, you see like issues of a magazine like that, and you're like, oh, what if I had been like coming of age when like this shit was coming out? You know, it's like, it seems like it was an exciting time, and that Slash was like a big part of that.
Hallie, I don't know if you have an idea, and I don't know if I do either. Why is it that like 18 to like 24, like that's when like your musical identity really is cemented into you? And you might, you know, check out stuff after then, but it's rare for something to be like, oh, this is me, you know, in music form after that.
I want to look up to see if like any, like if this has been studied, because it is so true, right? There's something about like your brain at those ages that is just like, that is the music that is going to be just like in your heart till you die, you know. I want to know if like any, has a psychologist like looked into this?
But before the next episode, I'm going to Google that for like 10 minutes and see if I can find it. And if I can find it 10 minutes, then I'll report back. Let's talk about somebody that was just after that time period, isn't as well known, but maybe should be more well known. We debuted a track of punk news by Dina and the Poor Man's Opera. And of course, Dina is Dina Shoskis of the Cucumbers. And the Cucumbers is not a super famous band, but that's kind of a new wave band that maybe you read about, like maybe like you're reading a review of like the Go-Go's, and then like in the review it'll mention the Cucumbers very briefly. So the Cucumbers are not a super well-known new wave band, but they were a respected one, if that makes sense. And if you check out their early stuff, it's really good. Anyway, the Cucumbers were never super famous, and Dina has been making music consistently since like 1982. She just put out this new single called Dance the Night Away, and it is very much it very much has the sound of like 80s Dolly Parton, Honky Tonk, Joe Eli, Honky Tonk kind of stuff, walking the line between 80s country and 80s pop, and maybe a little bit of new wave, but not a whole lot. And Hallie, I don't know if it's just me being nostalgic. I don't know if it's just some chemical reaction. I thought this track was like, and I'm not going to say this track is like groundbreaking, because I mean, I've heard it before, but it just seems so perfect. It's like almost too perfect. I think this track is like amazing.
I liked it. I mean, I'm with you. I don't think it's groundbreaking. And I think like the reason it's so catchy is because it is actually just like a Frankenstein of like a bunch of other songs like it that you've heard. But it sure made me feel good. And the video is like actually like kind of brilliant, right? Like the video is just like people dancing, but like the clips that they chose are like every, I don't know. This video made me feel good about life.
Well, that's pretty much the highest recommendation you can name. This is an abstract thought that I've had for, I don't know, a couple of years. Like, when you think about the idea of dancing, it's so weird. Like if aliens came down and saw people dancing, I think they'd be, like, creeped out. Like, why are these creatures, like, moving in, like, weird positions, like, that they don't normally move in, and, like, shaking almost as, like, they're possessed? You know what I mean? Like, I think dancing is, like, a weird thing. And why do humans dance? And often dancing is linked to, you know, romantic interactions. It's often seen as the predecessor to romantic interactions. And so why, you know, and I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, I will say that like my husband and I absolutely 100% fell in love like on the dance floor. There was like a summer that like our friends and I were like going out dancing like every weekend. And so yeah, there is something about it, but I think you're right. Just the same as like when you look at these, like you'll watch these like nature documentaries and you'll see like a male bird and he's doing some like crazy dance with like his feathers to like attract his mate. And you're looking at it and you're like, that's possibly the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. And I think you're right. I think any other species watching us dance would probably think I was pretty, pretty foolish. But man, when you're a human, there is an allure if someone can dance.
And it feels good. It feels good to dance.
It sure does. I mean, I was actually a professional dancer. So yeah, I'm all about dancing, man. In fact, I wouldn't have married someone that couldn't throw down on the dance floor.
Real interesting. Should people focus more on dancing in their personal lives, do you think?
Absolutely. This I know has been studied. Dancing makes you a happier person. It just does.
I have a completely unproven, untested, unexamined theory whatsoever that dancing is one of the healthiest things you can do and really is what makes you live a long life. My only two examples being Lee Scratch Perry, who's like 85 now, championship dancer when he was a teenager, a championship dancer. And every once in a while, I'll see like a ballerina that's like 85 or 80 and is still doing like ballerina kind of things. You know what I mean? So oh, I think yeah. Dancing is probably the healthiest thing you can do, really.
No, wait, do you like to dance? Because I feel like I've seen you at shows and I don't remember if you were dancing or not.
I do like to dance, but I'm not good at it. I like to mod, and that one of the funnest I've ever had at a show was I think it was posers, Shitty Friends, and like people were just like standing there, and I was just in a really good mood, and you're like, I'm going to mosh, and so I started moshing, but in the cool way. Basically, I started circle pitting, you know, not like bashing into people, uh-huh. And then it just went. It was among the most fun I ever had. It was like nonstop good spirited moshing. You know, people were like falling down. Like, the floor was just covered. It was a small club. The floor was covered in beer and people were like falling down right and left. And it was just a sloppy madhouse. And it was so insanely fun. So yes, I do like to dance. I think I'm really bad at it though. And I should work at getting better at it. But I think I'm really bad at dancing.
No, there's no, but see, okay. So my husband always says he's not a good dancer. He had to just fake it because he thought that it would impress me, and it totally worked. I think he's a great dancer, but it's all confidence, right? You just gotta like go for it. If you go for it with enough confidence, no one will question whether you're a good dancer or not.
Well, that's true with life. If you go through with enough confidence, no one will question you in general.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about something that people aren't questioning, but maybe they should. Maybe they should. Chubby and the Gang are going to release a new LP on Partisan Records. That's going to be out sometime next year. There's not a whole lot of details about it. What's important and interesting about this is Chubby and the Gang is the latest, or not the latest, but is a recent punk buzz band. And unlike most punk bands, they sold out of the first two presses of their record, and they're on a third or a fourth. The record is called Speed Kills. People freaked out over this record, and I kind of got on the hype train myself when I bought it, and I listened to it, and I dug it. I like it a lot, but like, I wonder, is the hype unwarranted? To me, this sounds like very good UK 84 kind of punk, but I don't feel it's groundbreaking. I kind of feel like I've heard it before. I just think people are freaking out because the one track's got a piano in it, which is cool. And I'm not dissing on the band. I think they're cool. I'm just not sure the hype is warranted. But maybe Hallie Bullet disagrees.
Yeah, I disagree. I love this stuff. But, oh. So you're saying you liked it maybe upon first listen, but now you don't think it's stood the test of time.
I feel it, people were freaking out over this record, and so I did what I do sometimes. I listen to about 90 seconds worth on YouTube, like 3 30-second clips. I'm like, yeah, this is rad, and I stopped listening to it, and I bought it at the record store. Mm-hmm. And I took it home, and I played it, and I thought it was good, but it kind of sounds like a little bit more swinging UK subs, you know, or Cox Bar was just a little bit more punk to it, you know? And I feel like I had heard it before, and people were talking about, like, it's the greatest punk thing recently, you know?
Well, I know exactly what you're saying, but at the same time, like who is putting out quality music of that style right now?
Well, true. Nobody.
So like if you're into that stuff and you're like looking for something new in that very specific niche-y type of punk, this is like pretty good. It's pretty exciting that anybody's putting out music of this style that's like this quality, because I feel like also this is like a very specific category of punk that there's also been maybe kind of like a lot of bad like bad music that's like that came out later sort of trying to be that, but I think this is I like this stuff. I like it a lot.
I guess what it is, and maybe this is me being closed-minded or maybe this is me being objective, is a lot of cool music websites are like, oh, Consequence of Sound, Pitchfork, whoever, they're like, oh, this is punk. And I'm like, and they're talking about how great it is, but I'm like, yeah, but UK subs have been doing this for 40 years. Why is this cool? And I guess the answer is because it's slightly better than the other people that have been doing this, not necessarily the UK subs, but it's slightly better than the people that came after the UK subs that just copied the UK subs. And maybe that's the answer.
Got that with something a little like more fresh mixed in, but I haven't listened, but I definitely haven't listened. Like I don't own the record. I haven't listened to it as much as you have. So, but I think it's like that old stuff mixed with like something like fresher and like fun. I don't know. I'm into it. I mean, also it's like, I feel like that's what I've heard people saying about, now I'm spacing on the name. What's Ian MacKaye's newest?
Crikey.
Yeah, right. So I've heard people say like, this isn't I don't like this as much as I would have liked a new Fugazi record, but like there's not a new Fugazi record coming out, so I'll happily take this. You know, like I wonder if some people wouldn't feel that way about this Chubby and the Gang stuff. You know, it's like it's fun to have new music of this style.
True. And honestly, seeing it, maybe it's the kind of band like when you see it live, you're like, holy crap, this is like punk rock. Like, yeah. I dug Aim on the Sniffers when I heard them. And then when I saw them, I'm like, holy crap. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Listen, let's talk about a band that is extremely divisive on punk news. And by divisive, John loves it and everyone else hates it. The Garden, one of my all-time favorite bands of the past 10 years. Garden, Crazy in the Brains, probably my Bad Canoes, my three favorite bands of the past 10 years, probably. The Garden recently released their, I guess it's kind of their fifth album or sixth album, depending on how you count, called Kiss My Super Bowl Ring. It is without question their most varied, and I would say it's their most daring release. Their landmark release, I would say, is Ha Ha, which is an absolute masterpiece. I thought Kiss My Super Bowl Ring, which is two records after that, is more daring, challenging, not always as fun to listen to, but ultimately a very rewarding and interesting and cool record. They released a video called A Struggle. And before I even comment on this, Hallie Bullet, your opinion on The Garden. Cool guys doing interesting, weird stuff, or a bunch of tryhards, as the punk news commenters say?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'll be honest. Like, I can't get into this stuff at all. It's just, but it's not for me. I very much, like, when I'm listening to this music, I'm like, okay, like, I can't get into this, but also I very much feel that, like, I'm not who they're writing this stuff for. But what I love about this band just objectively is that, like, I do sort of I think it's really cool how they're not really, like, in a genre, right? I was the first thing that I ever heard about them was that they were one of the only bands that had ever played Riot Fest and Coachella and what is it? Camp Flognaw. Isn't that I think that's more of is that like a hip hop or rap festival? What is that festival?
That's Tyler, the Creator's festival, which is a lot of hip hop, but I mean, I'm not a huge Tyler fan but he likes punk too. And he books punk bands as well.
Yeah, I just thought, I don't know, I get the sense that this band is like, does not care what genre they're in. They're just making the music that they want to make. And if you like it, you like it. And I think there's something really cool and respectable about that. I don't feel like there's a lot of people even doing that right now. I feel like music is so subdivided right now and people are making music and they know exactly who their audience is and they're making music specifically for this very type of person. I don't know. I think there's something cool and shapeshifty about this band that I admire, even if I don't want to like put on the music and like rock out in my house, you know?
Well put. I dig this track. Well, actually, first of all, I dig how weird they are, and people might think that they're like trying to be weird, but I've interviewed them a couple of times. They're not trying to be weird. They are weird. And I love their what a lot of people don't realize is a lot of their imagery that they use is stuff that they came up with. Like in this video, like there's like a claymation Oscar the Grouse essentially like flying around for no real reason. And if you really dig into the band, a lot of these weird symbols actually have some sort of meaning or relevance. Before this album, they were using like a jester as like some deep symbol, and now they're using like garbage. And I also like how like they're wearing eye patches for like no real reason, and somehow they're suggesting that a trash truck has some relevance. I also like how the track is difficult on one end, but not difficult on the other hand. On one hand, it's kind of just weird track that's all over here and all over there. But on the other hand, it's really a short grindcore song followed by like their weird post-punk stuff followed by another short grindcore song. And I actually like really commend them for making extremely aggressive, straight up punk. That's almost too aggressive for me because I'm not a huge grindcore guy, but I'll take 30 seconds of grindcore if it's followed by two minutes of post-punk, you know, and that's exactly what they do. And I just think they are a fantastic band. I'm not sure if they're going to they rose fairly quickly, got up to a medium high level, and have essentially stayed there since. And that's not the worst thing in the world. But I hope that's not discouraging to them, or I hope they continue to rise. A possible parallel career-wise might be Screaming Females, which I didn't even realize until like last year, the year before. Like Screaming Females never blew up. Screaming Females never really had a jump in fame. They just got a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger. And now they're like actually kind of a big band, you know, like they'll play like 2,000 capacity venues in some places, you know. And so I hope that happens with the Garden, and maybe it has. The danger that the Garden is playing with is Screaming Females were never really a buzz band, where the Garden were, and so when you're a buzz band, it can really backfire on you, like it did with the Poor Vivian Girls. And so I just hope the Garden. I think they're some of the most interesting artists out there today. So I hope they keep doing their thing. And I dig this album, and I dig the video, and I dig the track.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I feel like Screaming Females, I guess, no, maybe they were never really like truly buzz bandy. But I feel like when she did that, cover with the woman from Garbage, and I feel like that was right on the heels of her getting written up as like one of the best guitarists in the history of music. I feel like they were kind of buzzy then. And I felt like from the outside watching, like I felt like a little bit of that bubble burst for them. But I think maybe just because of the kind of band they are and the genre they're in, I think their core fan base is just like incredibly like loyal. Do you know what I mean? Like they're, whereas I wonder if that, like, does a band like the Garden, I don't know. That's not, they're not playing like punk. And again, maybe because they aren't really in a particular scene, or like maybe they wouldn't have that same like fan loyalty. Does that make any sense what I just said?
Well, it certainly does. So you were saying that the Screaming Females were somewhat of a buzz band, but then that bubble burst and they were facing, I guess, the downside of that, and that they recovered and continued to climb upwards, or they dropped down, but they maintained at that level.
I'm saying they dropped down, but that there was like, you know, at least like they can still play 2000 capacity venues, because like the people that are into them are just going to be with them till the end. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know if the Garden and to a degree, like the Screaming Females have somewhat of an identifiable sound and a unique thing that they do, whereas the Garden is all over the map, you know?
Yeah.
So, an interesting point. I don't know. Okay. Well, let's see. Hallie Bullet, should we play a song? Should we wrap it up? What should we do?
Play a song. What do you want to play?
Which we play? We could play Dina. We could play The Garden. We could play something random. In tribute to Bob Biggs of Slash Records, let's play something that came out on Slash Records, just called Iconic, great label. Tons of great tunes. How about that?
Yeah.
Let's do that. So we'll end up with that song. So before we wrap that up, Hallie Bully, any last words for the listeners out there? Anything you want them to know? Any dance advice?
Oh, wait, no. Do I have any dance advice? No, like put on your favorite shit and a feather boa and just dance around your house, because it's like all we have right now, right? You gotta have fun in your house. So I think everyone start dancing, especially also dancing in your house. You don't have to worry about whether you're good or not. I don't really have any parting thoughts. I'm enjoying this for indie rock people. And really only indie rock people. I'm enjoying this album by The Goodbye Party, which are, I think, you know, mostly out of Philly, actually, John. This band, The Goodbye Party, has an album out on Double Double Whammy, which is a label that I like a lot of the stuff they put out. But this is, I don't remember the main singer-songwriter's name. I'm sorry, dude. You're really talented. I'm sorry. I don't remember your name right now. But this project also has Kyle Gilbride from Swearin' and Marin Jones from All Dogs. And I think it's really, really melodic and pretty, and I'm enjoying it. That's my only parting words.
Well, there you go. And let's close this down with one of the greatest poets of Slash Records. Let's close it down with Jim Germs and Darby Crash. And we will close this up with, let's do, I'm trying to do something that fits within the current time frame. Let's do Lexicon Devil, people that can do funny tricks with words.